It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 421. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. Boy, did you really use that this week? And I'll get to that in a second. And I love it. Please leave me a voicemail message, and I have two voicemail messages on the same topic that I'm going to be discussing. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Send me a friend request, or just follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. And we got the wiki, which has links to all the past shows, where you can review the audio and all the links that were talked about going all the way back to show one, and that's mtswiki.com. The first part of tonight's show, I'm going to talk about LastPass, issue my retraction on the comments I made last week. I was wrong. You showed me why I was wrong. You explained in great detail why I was wrong. And I am going to share that with you. I have two voicemails that nail it right dead on. I have a stack of email, which I picked like 15 of the messages. I may not read them all. I got 30 emails saying literally the exact same thing, that I am wrong. And so I hereby wave the white flag and declare, Uncle, I know when I'm wrong, and I'm going to admit it, and I'm going to say it. I was looking at things differently. And to that end, I empathized with the listener where I read the email where he lost his password to LastPass. And he wanted it reset and could not. But he did not follow all of the proper procedures, which you can, and you would be able to reset it. And when you listen to all of this, it is the sole reason why most of you use LastPass, is for that very security reason. And I'm even going to link, and this was brought up by a couple of you, of the Wired writer who his password got hacked. Actually, it was just pieces of information, and someone applied the social engineering of his information to Apple, got his Apple password reset. They logged in and they wiped out all of his Apple devices remotely because they navigated the security questions. They had just enough information to get his password reset on Apple. So I have that article I'm going to link. So I got lots to talk about. That's just a teeny piece of the show. I have tremendous stories from this week in the trenches consulting that I want to share. And then I have another great stack of email. We can go on all night. I don't know how long this show is going to be, but it's definitely going to be longer than the typical show. So with that, you've heard me talk every week about Instant House Call. But what I need to share with you is a real life example from a couple nights ago where I'm using Instant House Call for my son. My son purchased a second monitor, and he needed the settings. He didn't know how to make the one to the left and the one to the right. He needed his wireless all locked down and set because he got a new router, and this new router had USB ports, and he wanted to make his shared files available and his printing available USB. I had him go to my website and click, which takes you to miketechshow.instanthousecall.com. So if you get Instant House Call, you literally pick a name, customer, a client, a friend, family, can go to that name.instanthousecall.com. They download this program that allows them to make a connection where it sends a request to you. You just click accept and you're bang, you're in, and you're remote control their system. He had dual monitor and I had both literally that can slide back and forth. I could had total control, was able to reset that remotely, set up his router. I took care of all that. And then he went on his laptop, downloaded that file, and I was connecting at the same time, making sure shared resources and everything was happening. I was remoted in to both his computers and took care of that. That's what you need from a tool for remote access, where there's no ifs, ands, or buts, no questions. It has the tool set that you want, that you're going to use. And right now, you can go to instanthousecall.com and download and play with this. Or actually, for 15 days, use the promo code MikeTechShow. And you will be, once you use this for 15 days, you're going to be back and you're going to say, you know what? I need me someone. I want some. Give me this. I need this for my clients. I need this for my family. That's what it's all about. It will work. And if you have any questions, just let me know and I'll connect you with their tech support. It's great. So try it out. Let's start first with, there were two voicemails that I received that I merged together from Patrick. So give a listen. He's spot on with the comments on LastPass.
Hello, Mike. Patrick Boyle, Springfield, Missouri. From last week's show, I'm sympathetic to the person that couldn't remember their master password in LastPass, but there's a couple of things there. One, LastPass doesn't say you have to have it installed on some other computer. I mean, if you go to LastPass support, their FAQ about the second thing down is, I forgot my master password. How do I recover access to my account? Well, one, they don't know it, so they can't send it to you or reset it. And that's just the way it is. That is security, my friend. I mean, you don't want somebody else to be able to figure that out, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. Well, about using reset, you know, answers, and anyway. So they tell you to check, make sure you're not getting any typos, and try your password hint. And then you can go to the account recovery page to activate your local one-time password. This allows you to change your master password if you've logged into LastPass previously on any computer and is the only way to reset your password. You should try this on all browsers, on all computers where you've used LastPass plugin to access your account. So he misunderstood. I mean, he could be using the same computer he had it installed on and possibly recover it from there. And if you recently changed your master password, you can actually go through steps to revert it to the previous password. The sixth step is, if you don't have it by now, you can delete your account and start over. So, they do say that, but he misunderstood a key point about he could have tried to recovery on his own computer. Now, about this secret questions or secret answers to questions thing, no. You need to look up some stories. About a few weeks ago, there was a writer for Wired magazine, you know, Wired.com, Matt Honan, and some bad guys managed to figure out a little piece of information here and a little piece of information there that was public, and they managed to have his secret answers to his questions, hacked his account, and because he had all Apple stuff, was able to tell the web page where you log in at Apple, wipe my iPad, wipe my iMac, and God, I can't even imagine all that he went through on that. But no, LastPass was the way to go. You know, they have you can have your passwords available to you on any device, your Android, your iPad, your iPhone. I think they even have versions for Linux. So, you know, you change it anywhere, and if it's available anywhere else that you have it installed. So if you don't remember your master password, well, that's unfortunate. But having a way for them to give it to you is not security. I do agree that KeePass is a good program. I used to use that myself. However, it natively does not synchronize your password list, although you can use a plug-in to make that happen. You can save them all in Dropbox and just get them from there. Of course, if you don't have access to Dropbox, then hopefully you've got a local copy of your latest database with all of those passwords in it. But I've got to point out, though, KeePass says, let's see, it has a page called Composite Master Key. And on that page, under Master Passwords, it says, if you forget this master password, all your other passwords in the database are lost, too. There isn't any backdoor or a key which can open all databases. There is no way of recovering your passwords. So your listener's actually gone from a system where recovery is possible if you have access to any computer you've installed the browser plugin into and have, I would assume, some further information there, to one that there's no possible way of recovery except by finding the scrap of paper you wrote it down on originally. So, I'm defending LastPass, and I think justly so. Certainly open to other ideas, though. Thank you much.
Patrick, thank you for the comments and your information and what you researched on LastPass. You're absolutely dead on, and that's why I'm doing this. There's another voicemail. This is a short voicemail from Mark. Give a listen.
Hey, Mike. This is Mark out at Loma Mar, California, and I just listened to podcast 420, and as usual, great show. But I really had to disagree with you on your take on LastPass. There's no way I want them to be able to reset my master password via some social engineering scam, just like that Wired writer just got hacked by recently. When you have your LastPass password, that's golden. That's, you know, brokerage, banking accounts, you know, eBay, Amazon logins, you know, stuff I really need to be secure. And I don't want, in any circumstance, them to even be able to see that or provide me with, you know, some security question, you know, what's your, you know, first girlfriend's name or whatever that allows you to get into that account, because someone I know may decide to mess around with me. It's highly unlikely for me, probably, than most people, but I think maybe it's just paranoia on the Steve Gibsonian level, but I really like the way it is now. And I hope they keep it that way. Anyway, just my 2 cents. I almost always agree with everything you say, but when I heard that one, I yelled at my Zoom player, said, no way. But thanks a lot, Mike. Take care.
Thank you. And if this should prove, please, if you disagree with me, leave me a voicemail message. Send me an email so I will continue the abuse. Here we go. Mike, this is from Marty. I have to disagree with you regarding LastPass, not being able to provide you a lost password. LastPass is more than just a password safe. One of their main premises is that only the owner should be able to access the saved passwords. They are following the trust no one principle. If they could recover your password, that would mean that any government agency supplying them with a subpoena, they would have to turn over. At that point, all your passwords and encrypted notes would be available. Their default webpage even says it's secure. All your data is encrypted locally on your PC, and only you can unlock it. Marty, thank you. From Tom, you made a comment about needing a way to reset your LastPass security vault. As a LastPass Enterprise user, I have done research to be sure that this secure database is in fact secure. The reason that they don't offer a way to do it through their website is because if they could reverse engineer your vault and unlock it for you, then your vault would not be secure. The LastPass methodology has been reviewed by Steve Gibson from the Security Now podcast with Leo Laporte, and he approves their zero-knowledge transfer method. LastPass does not offer a way to recover an earlier backup of your secure vault, but it requires the user to plan ahead and generate a one-time use password and save it and copy and save and a copy of their secure vault somewhere. This is critical data. The user needs to be responsible to back it up. They also offer a way for you to get to your vault on another computer that has an older copy of your vault on it. You can also go back to an older password that you used by downloading a backup copy from their site. But you need to know a specific password that you were using on a specific date. They have done as much as they can to help users recover their data, but the model they use is that they are not able to reverse engineer your secure vault. As a secure vault, the only way to unlock it is with your password that you set. Your password is used as the private encryption key. If they could bypass this, the encryption would be worthless. Any data encryption that can be reset by a cloud vendor means that the cloud vendor is able to access your secure data. If law enforcement or even if a curious employer just wants access, that really ruins the integrity of the secure data vault. Tom, this is great explanations here. That's why I want to share them. And I made the wrong analogy. I used last week with the listener who lost his LastPass password, I use the analogy of a bank password. Well, why can't you ask me enough questions to guarantee who I am and then reset the password? Well, here you go. This is why. And it's a security feature that it just didn't dawn on me. And I didn't think that through when I was agreeing with the listener. And the analogy that I made, it doesn't take for this particular thing, which is a master password saving all of your passwords. I understand, and you've convinced me. Let's just keep it going. And this is from Wendy. The guy who emailed you explaining about LastPass not having a recovery option doesn't understand that missing this feature makes LastPass more secure. LastPass cannot be brute forced, social engineered, and even a government subpoena. By the way, a lot of you are using that. Guys are really afraid. No, I'm kidding. A government subpoena cannot open my LastPass account, which is literally the keys to my queendom. All information, including the master password, is encrypted locally before going to LastPass, so nothing is sent or stored in the clear. In addition, when you make a master password, you are specifically warned that LastPass cannot and will not store your password. It's that secure. You can't say that about the alternative that was mentioned. KeyPass, by using challenge questions, could be broken into by anyone who knows your dog's name or the name of your childhood school. Actually, KeyPass is worse. They also are the same. If you lose that, it's stored locally. They can't. So KeyPass actually has the same security model. Speaking of challenge questions, it has been suggested that in an effort to make challenge questions more secure, you might answer them with a fake answer. Questions like your dog's name, your mother's maiden name, Where did you meet your spouse can easily be found on the internet. So using a fake answer, like purple, would combat anyone guessing the answer. However, will you remember that that answer in 6 months? I doubt it. The method I've come up with is to answer these challenge questions truthfully, but have a standard filler, such as your house number, that you add to the backside of the answer. Oh, I like this. An example would be my mother's maiden name, O'Hagan, is now O'Hagan 5754. My dog's name, Spot, is now Spot 5754. Easy for me to remember, but not guessable. I like that. Wendy, thank you very, very much. This is from Colin from England. Love the show, yada, yada, yada. Regarding the email from the LastPass show about a lost LastPass master password, the reason LastPass doesn't have a password reset option is that it is secure. Anything that has the option to reset your password is not secure. The answers to any so-called security questions can be found out by a third party if they're prepared to do a little work and or a little social engineering. One benefit of LastPass is that LastPass themselves don't know your password, so they can't be hacked either. Your data is encrypted on your own computer using your own password, and the encrypted information is sent to LastPass, who can then synchronize your other devices. LastPass explains this in their documentation and specifically states that they cannot reset or remind a user of their password. The safest method is to use a complicated master password and commit it to memory. If you doubt your ability to remember it, write it down in a safe place such as your wallet. Don't label it LastPass password or anything. Ideally, you would disguise the written down password by, for example, interchanging every second and third character or excluding the first or last few characters or whatever method you will remember should you ever need to refer to this written down version. If you want absolute security, then LastPass is a great app. But to get absolute security, you have to accept that it is absolutely secure, and there is absolutely no way to access your data without knowing the password. Colin, that's awesome. Thank you. I could go on and on. All right. Jofred, Michael, Nathan, James, and many, many more. You've sent emails literally saying the same thing and the same thoughts. Thank you for expressing your opinion and telling me how you feel, and always call me out on something that you disagree with. And I really appreciate that. And I've learned a lot from all your email and your voicemails. And we will put this to bed. And LastPass is very, very, very secure. And their whole security model around how they handle the master password is what it should be, and I concur, and thank you for straightening me out. Before we get to the In the Trenches segment, during the summer, it seems like everyone is on a different schedule. Vacations, shorter days, working remotely, so meeting all your clients is almost impossible. But GoToMeeting by Citrix with HD Faces makes it so you can hold an online meeting anywhere in the world. Any device can connect, and it's easy. It's just one click, and they can connect to the meeting, and you can now see the person that you're meeting with and make that visual connection. There's nothing like it, and that's why I really recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces, because you will make that impression in that presentation or meeting. Maybe it's a client presentation and you want to nail that. And the way to do it, make that eye contact and them see you, you see them. It's great. You can hold unlimited meetings for one flat rate. But right now, Mike Tech Show listeners can try it out free for 30 days by going to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code podcast. So that's it. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click on Try It Free, enter the promo code podcast, and you'll get to experience this free for 30 days. So this week, I have been extremely busy with working on problems and just getting down and dirty and solving them, and I want to share some of these problems with you. Last week, I mentioned a DNS issue I resolved for a client, or at least I was in the process of resolving. When you have Hyper-V running on Windows Server 2008, the virtual network card gets an IP address, and then the physical adapter has an IP address. But the DNS server name gets registered automatically in the DNS, since it's Active Directory DNS integrated. So you basically have two IP addresses with the same server name. DNS gets confused. And when they're registered, I noticed that when I removed one from the DNS database, all the DNS issues went away. So we picked the virtual NIC, because that's the seems to work better, to be the only DNS adapter for DNS. The other physical NIC is still there. It has an IP address, but I want the virtual one to answer only DNS requests. So now the virtual address is answering that. But what happens when you reboot? When you reboot, both network cards by default automatically registered themselves in DNS. Well, I forgot about a little option, and I remembered this, and on Saturday reviewed this with my client, and we unchecked the box. And you only want to do this absolutely when you're absolutely forced into it and it's required. The physical adapter in the network properties, I unchecked in the DNS and advanced section. I uncheck register this adapter in DNS. So this way, when it reboots, it will not register an entry into the DNS database. That solved the problem for my client. If you run into things like this with advanced DNS issues and problems, I wanted to mention that to just maybe you'll think back at this and remember that. Say, wow, I remember Mike talking about that. And there is an option to not register an address in DNS, a NIC card and an IP address, if we have that issue. So I wanted to share that, and I wasn't ready to talk about it last week, so that was the solution. You've heard me mention the Orthodontist. That is an all Mac shop, except for one PC. They have a $30,000 X-ray machine that the X-rays go to this very, very old XP computer. When I was brought in months ago to help with an issue, and this is a client that I installed an Untangle appliance, and I've been doing some work for. My first day, I seen that PC, I seen it was old, and I seen that it was critical to the operations because it was for the X-rays. I said, what are you doing to back it up? Oh, we back it up. We got this software. Here's this external drive. I said, can I log in? And I logged in, and I seen there were no files on the drive. There was nothing hidden. There was nothing being backed up. I said, this is a desktop operating system. You want to put Shadow Protect on here, and it will email me when it's successful or when it fails, and let's back this up. It's old. This is a critical machine. I want to get a full image of this thing onto your external drive. Okay. They allowed me to purchase that. I installed it on my next visit, and I was getting backups, and they were working every night. Well, on August 10th, Friday, that was the last backup, because Monday afternoon, that computer died, and it was not backed up Monday night, and they had taken 5 x-rays on Monday morning that were now not available, and they couldn't get to. So I took the computer, and I took one of my older XP computers here that was still significantly newer than their machine, and from totally different hardware, I used the Shadow Protect boot CD, I used the external drive, and I completely restored the whole image to a completely different hardware. And it restored perfectly. This was on Saturday over the weekend. That was great. And I was able to get this up and running, and everything was great. Now the question is, would it communicate back with the X-ray machine, all the drivers? And when I restored it, I seen it was XP Service Pack 1. I'm like, oh my God. So I put Service Pack 3, then the 177 upgrade hot fixes after that, post-Service Pack 3. I got the thing humming. On Monday morning, matter of fact, Tyler helped me. My youngest son, Carrie, this is a pretty heavy replacement computer. We got there. I took the hard drive. When the system crashed, the hard drive had no problem. So I took their hard drive out. And I mounted it in a case that could make this IDE drive. Yes, I said IDE. It wasn't even SATA. So the IDE drive made it a USB and brought it because those five X-rays were in the software that's used to accept the X-rays, but they weren't exported out. So a quick call to tech support of the manufacturer of the software and the X-ray machine, and they were great. And they helped me extract the X-rays from the external drive. So that was cool. All I had to do was edit an INI file, and I was able to point it to the database on that drive, and I was able to get all the X-rays. They were ecstatic. They're up and running. The backups are working great. Everything. And it's because of backing up the system, everything works. So let's fast forward. Last night, actually, no, two nights ago, another client machine crashed, but he has a full backup. The drives are coming in since it was a Dell machine. These were mirror drives, two new drives, both drives failed. So very interesting. So two new drives are being sent in. They're going to be arrived tomorrow. So tomorrow night, I'm literally going to be hooking up those two drives onto this Dell system that's running Windows 7 Professional. And again, I'll be using Shadow Protect to do a full restore. I expect full recovery because I know the backups were good. Guarantee that you're getting good backups and life becomes much easier and you will be godlike to your customer when you're able to restore them and say, see, this is why I made you buy those external drives and buy that backup software. The client who's internal drive that was not backed up on their server that's got 300 gig. I don't know. I think I'm going to get an update tomorrow. We sent the drive to $300 data recovery. I will report back if this was successful or not. The $300 data recovery, they will not charge you if they can't recover the data. So rather than send it out to drive savers and spend that fortune, we're hoping that $300 data recovery is going to be able to get to the files. Now, I contacted them over the weekend, gave them the model, and explained the problem that we're experiencing with the drive, and I can't recover any of the data from it. Well, they believe they've had 33 drives like that, where many of them they were able to recover. They told me they basically have an 80% chance we have of getting 100% of the data, if that makes sense. Our odds are pretty good, and we filled out all the information, shipped that out, and we're now crossing our fingers, and I'm going to follow up tomorrow, and we're going to see where we're at, and I'll report back on that service. Did they recover the 300 gigs of data that we need? Something I found, and I want to go back down to the orthodontist. When I first hooked up the replacement computer that I recovered everything to, I couldn't get out to the internet, and I couldn't see their network, and I was getting the wrong IP address. I was getting a 192.168.1. whatever. That's not their network. They have a 10 network. They're getting their IP addresses from a Comcast router. Why am I getting a 192.168? That means there is a rogue router on the network misconfigured and giving out IP addresses, and I searched and searched. I can't find it. The one doctor who set up everything is on vacation, and I chatted with him on the phone. He's going to check a couple places and see if we can find this rogue router. What can someone use to find out? It's almost impossible, like, where that rogue router is. Is there, I don't know. I mean, how would you know where it's located? How can you shut it down? I guess there's advanced networking techniques to shut down rogue routers where if you have port security on different switches and you could basically block DHCP, but we don't have that kind of a sophisticated switch. This is a 24-port switch, pretty small network, but we have a rogue router that we must find out where it's located because I could see other problems happening. So I wanted to mention that. On Tuesday, I was at a temporary office for a client that's having a new office reconstructed. There's a lot of construction before they move in, so they needed temporary digs, and they went to one of those office places where the office facility where you can rent an office. I went there to get this little mini office up and running. They already had two notebooks on the network, and I was bringing a notebook to lend them to work with, and my client bought a network printer from Staples, an HP office jet. So we needed to get that up and running on the network, and I couldn't connect. I kept getting a 169 address. Now, if you get a 169, that means nothing's responding out there. That means either there's a problem where you're not connected with either the cable, the hub, the switch, or there's no DHCP server answering your request for an IP address. Both the printer and my laptop couldn't get the IP address. And I did an IP config slash all on the two laptops. I'm forgetting a simple step that I'm going to mention. I seen they're getting a 10 address. I'm like, whoa, where's my 10? They're just getting 169s. And I'm like, what's going on? And it was driving me crazy. I said, did anybody have to configure anything on your laptops? Did you have to do anything in order to connect? My client swore. I'm telling you, she swore they did nothing. After an hour, I said, they had to have done something. I said, I need to talk to the tech support of the building. I called the guy. The guy says, oh, yeah, you need a static IP address. I was like, when did they get? Oh, yeah, they were out at lunch yesterday, and I was able to come up. And I put static IP addresses on their laptops. So they weren't even there in the office when the tech support for this facility came in, got to their laptops, put static IP addresses on, and left. So they didn't think anything was touched on the laptops. So what I did not do, and I can't believe I missed this step and I would have found out, I didn't open up the GUI interface of the network properties to see, and I would have seen that the IP addresses were manually placed in there and that they weren't getting DHCP. I was getting punchy after that. This was like after 5 hours of being there working on other things. So I had a large software install that I had to work with the software manufacturer. It's a title insurance company. So I don't know if anybody's familiar with Title Express. That's like a 2-hour install of Title Express. So anyway, there was lots of things to do. And once he gave me the static IP addresses, life was good. Got the laptop on, got the network printer, went around, got them all going. I was battling that. Yesterday morning, I was measuring the network speed, the internet speed at my client's Comcast router versus the corporate managed router, and then behind the router going from the switch to the desktop, because they're buying the speed of 22 meg down and 5 meg up from Comcast, that they are promised that they get boost to 30 meg. Well, they're only getting 10 meg when you measure. I got to the office before anyone was in, actually just one person who let me in, and we were getting 10 meg down. And nothing was going on in the office. So I'm like, wait a second here. So I go back to the closet, and I plug my laptop into the back of the Comcast router, and this is what we had to do because Comcast said, there's nothing wrong on their end. They're seeing full speed. You got a problem behind their router. Now, a lot of the times, Comcast is wrong. Well, Comcast was correct, because when I plugged into the back of Comcast router, I got 35 meg down, 30 meg up. So it was gorgeous internet connection. So now I plug into the back of the Cisco 800 corporate managed router. And what do I get? 10 meg down, 3 meg up. They're being capped from the VPN that's going to the corporate network, or there's a misconfiguration in the Cisco router that I have no access to, because this is one of those financial advisors that's managed by the corporate headquarters. So I documented everything and had their contact there that deals with the corporate headquarters. This is the findings. This is what has to happen. They either have to send a new router out, change the configuration of this router so we test again and they get their full bandwidth that they're paying for, or explain why they are capping and limiting the bandwidth that they're paying for, which is unlikely, I hope. I wrote up my report quickly, got that in their hands. These are some of the things that I'm working on. Now, late afternoon yesterday, I was at a client who, remember the person I told you about last week where I put a new drive into an older XP laptop and installed everything? Client got home. She couldn't get on her wireless network. So what's the password? And she's entering the password that she thinks it is. She has an iPad. The iPad's working. So why doesn't the laptop work? And then I said, well, can you get in to administrate the router? And the router is a D-Link router connected to the Comcast modem. And the D-Link router, she can't get in. I said, I'll come out and I'll take care of this. It's a simple setup. And it's just a reminder of what you may have to do. You reset the router to the factory defaults. So all I did was hold the paperclip into the reset button for 10 seconds, back to the factory defaults. The passwords, there's no password, and it's just admin logged in. We picked a password that we wrote down and made sure that's at a secure place. So this way, that is, we know what the admin password is now. And then I just reset the wireless for WPA2 security and set the wireless password. We tested it with all the devices. Life is good. Everything's running. A problem I ran into yesterday. When I was at my client yesterday morning, I had to make a phone call to a client's wife to make arrangements to go to his home to work on some laptops. So I pulled up, since you only can have one mobile number, and I have all the mobile, I have all the everything in my iPhone contact and Outlook, all the fields filled. So I have these extra phone numbers and information in the notes field. Why does Apple make it so easy to delete something? I must have swiped the wrong way and the delete came up at the note. And I didn't want to delete the note. I thought I was swiping it back and doing it right. Well, guess what? The note got deleted and all the information gone. And it beautifully synced to any device that was on. So now I'm back home yesterday afternoon and I need this note information. And I don't want to restore a PST from the night before backup. So it dawned on me, well, wait, my MacBook Pro was not on, so therefore did not get the latest sync of the contact information. So as long as I don't plug it into the network or get onto the wireless, it will be there. So now I'm booting up my laptop and quickly take myself off the Wi-Fi. I'm not plugged into the Ethernet. I go into contacts, I pull it up, and there's my note. And so that was great. And now that the note was there, I cut and pasted, emailed it to myself. When I was back in Outlook, I put it back in the contact and then let it resync, and all is well. So it was my quick answer to my dilemma. And remember that if you're in that kind of a synchronized environment, go to a device, don't let it go on to the network so you can sync. And then you're okay. All right, let's get to some email now. This is from Charlie, and he says, a great show, but the show he's talking about is I heard you on The Art of Podcasting and then listened to your last show. I'm actually the one that suggested Mark that he puts the time when the content begins in the show notes. I think they'd be waffling on about bacon for 20 minutes before finally getting on the subject of Linux. Laughing out loud. You were excellent on the show, and you have actually inspired me to finally start a podcast. I've been holding off for exactly the same reason you mentioned. I really enjoyed the Mike Tech Show and will be a regular listener from now on. You're iTuned. I would like to suggest LiberKey. And I actually forgot about that. I mentioned that a long time ago. And LiberKey, LiberKey.com for portable apps. It is the closest thing to a freeware Windows app store I have seen with auto updates, etc. And I understand your comment of the art of podcasting about LastPass now. This came up where I mentioned I would be doing a retraction. LastPass doesn't know your password, which probably is the reply in the about 20 emails you received. On Sunday night, by Sunday night, I had received 20 emails. By today, I received 10 more. So I received 30 emails. All saying the same thing about LastPass. So thank you, Charlie. This email is from Kate. Hi, Mike. I was listening to show 419 when a listener wrote in about replacing a rogue host file. Good for him that he managed to figure out how to change permissions and do it. I encountered changed host files a lot for a while, about a year and a half ago. Some malicious software, as you pointed out, monkeys with the host files, and it's a pain in the neck to fix. Also, SpyBot Search and Destroy would change the host file. And if you didn't jump through flaming hoops when you uninstalled SpyBot, you couldn't connect anything. I always carry a copy of the real host file for XP, Vista, and Windows 7 on my USB flash drives. I'm going to stop right there. Kate, I can't believe how simple of a solution that is, and I have not done that. Heed to this. Carry the host file for the operating systems so you can get... I never thought of that. That's a great idea. I always edit the one and make it like it. It's so much easier to just copy a blank one. See, it's the simple things. Let's continue. If you don't want to be bothered fixing the problem with brute force, I know of two tools that will restore the files correctly. One is called Complete Internet Repair. And I've written you about this one before, and I've talked about it, and I actually use that. It looks like the domain has changed hands or the website has been redesigned or something, but the tool is still up there. It's kind of hard to find, but here is a link to the download page, and I'll keep that. It's a portable tool, although it doesn't appear to be. The download file is an exe, but once downloaded, it will extract the utility wherever you want it. The other tool that I know of is tweaking.com Windows Repair, which you mentioned recently. Great tool. There is a new version which now includes the new tweaking.com registry backup utility. Yeah, I like that. Previous versions used our old friend Erunt. You can get the registry backup tool as a standalone too. Here are the links. Both are portable, but if you use the registry backup as a portable, please read the help file because it won't save the backup where you think if you don't make a change to the settings. And that's a bad thing. Why would they do that? Anyway, I'm glad you mentioned that. Also, on that site are other programs listed here that look useful, but which I haven't tried. There's one that says it will unhide non-system files hidden by infections, and another that will repair missing start menu icons hidden by infections. I like that. Too bad I didn't know that earlier this week when I was repairing start menu icons hidden by an infection. Unhide EXE works good for that. And you can get that from bleepingcomputer.com. Thanks, Mike. This is from Kate. And I keep that unhide utility and with rkill. And my favorite one, which is the registry merge that you want to be able to quickly be able to run an executable that you need to do before you even get to run rkill. So all of them I keep in my infection fighting directory on my USB stick. Great tips here, Kate. Thank you very, very much. This is from Ian, and he's asked me to upload the ISO for the Ultimate Boot CD for Windows. I can't do that. I don't think I can legally do that. But he's getting a lot of errors in building his Ultimate Boot CD. Is there a good tutorial out there or something that I can share with everybody that if you get errors, this is what you do to properly build that Ultimate Boot CD? If you got that ultimate tutorial or directions or help, let me know so I can put that in the show notes and I can share that in a future show. Wilfred, this is IP Cameras Program Go 1984. Hello, Mike. This is my first time to write you and love your podcast. Keep it up. I came across some interesting software in the area of NVR for security IP camera management. The company's name is Logiware, and their program is Go 1984 for CMS. Found a review on CNET that was helpful, but little else on the net. I'm working in a school in Manila, Philippines, that on a tight budget, and this software seems to be in our price range. The software has unlimited camera connect, which is great as we expand into more cameras. It's now in version 3.8, so it's been around for some years, but wonder if any of your listeners ever used it. My question to you is with video surveillance managing software, and this is not your usual area of business, but just put it out to see a response from others. Thanks for giving me a little of your time. Kind regards, Wilford. I have no experience on video surveillance and the software that goes with the surveillance and the camera software. If you have some feedback or some input on this that I can share or even put a show together, I would really appreciate it. And if you could take the time to put a voicemail together or audio file and send it to me, that would be awesome. Patrick, who left me the voicemail I played earlier on LastPass, sent me this email a week or so ago about Microsoft selling upgrades from Windows 7 to Windows 8 for $14.99. And then also, it's a free if you buy it after June some date. I have the links for this, and I will include that for everybody. Andy from Reninerd Computers, he asks a great question. This is one of those ones I'm marking, and I need to dedicate half a show or a good portion of a show about this. He's heard me mention on Podnuts about the compliance for the credit card industry, and can I go into more detail on that and dedicate a show? And yes, I will. And this email gets put aside for separate show materials. Great idea. Thank you. This is from John, and he asked me to make my URLs in my show notes clickable from, and this is where I'm not sure. He says, one of the many helpful features of your podcast is the list of all the links in the notes section in the iPhone, iPad. Having said so, I would like it would be more helpful if you could make these URLs addressable and clickable from the notes section of the iPhone and iPod app. Thanks again. And this is John. John, I have no idea how to do that. I mean, they're clickable in my notes. I use PowerPress to publish it from WordPress to make it a podcast. I don't know how to do that. If anybody knows how to make that happen so that in the iPad, in the app, that the notes that I have and make them truly clickable URLs, because they're clickable URLs as I'm making them in the notes, something must be happening in that translation when it becomes a feed and goes to iTunes. So the question is, what can I do to make those notes? Are other podcasts, are their notes clickable? Mine are not? If that's true, how do we do it? I could use some help here. This is from Nathan. Hey, Mike, just finished my second episode. Cool podcast. My input on portable apps is CAMEYO. It's for application virtualization. but I think it fits the bill for making an app portable. Also, at my previous job, they used group policy to lock down machines. They removed gpedit.msc from the machine to prevent any changes. Then they would copy gpedit from a machine that had it to a USB drive, and voila, portable gpedit. I can't vouch for the security of said setup, but it was an interesting use and case for making Windows programs components portable. Show idea, assuming it hasn't already been done. I've only heard two episodes, after all. As I work in IT, I've discovered some cool shortcuts from coworkers. How about an episode on hotkeys and shortcuts? And some of my favorites. You know, putting a show together, that'd be great, but I really have to have an accompanying PDF file. And I'd be glad to do that. So send me your shortcuts for programs. How about Control plus R? For Command, NCPA, CPL, Firewall.cpl. Control plus Alt plus Delete. Then using Run for lockdown systems. Or the Windows key plus Pause Break. Or Windows L. Or Control Alt Down Arrow. Okay, that one's just for fun. Anyway, keep up the great work. I'll try to catch up on some older episodes, and I'm sure I've missed a ton of useful information. Thanks, Nathan. Hey, I want to welcome all of the new listeners to the show who have found me through Podnuts, The Art of Podcasting, Tech Vets, the other podcast that I do, where there's been people that have been listening to Tech Vets and didn't realize that I do another show, the Mike Tech Show. So I've gotten some emails. So thank you and welcome, and I hope you stay subscribed and keep downloading the show and share it with others. I really appreciate it. A couple final notes. Fabs Auto Backup for Tech. The 40% discount runs out in August 31st. So if you use the code GDRWKK, and that'll be in the show notes, you get 40% off of Fabs Auto Backup for Tech, one of the best utilities that you'll ever want for copying all of your data and settings from one system and moving to another. It's that simple. It's a great program, and you get 40% off. I want to thank everybody for continuing to use my Amazon link. And don't forget, back to school, all your supplies, everything you need, go to amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/amazon. And there, your price stays the same, but you're making a great contribution to the Mike Tech Show. I'll get a percentage of that sale. Share that link. Push that link. Everybody, thank you so much for supporting the show by downloading the trial version of Instant House Call and checking it out, by downloading GoToMeeting and checking it out. Thank you so much for all your support, and I really appreciate it. And I will talk to you next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.